My tip to those who really want to learn fast another language and they're working and working adults, whether they have a family or not, they're busy because of their job. I really think.
Today, I'm thrilled to welcome the founder and owner of Christine Language Solutions. Originally from New York and raised in South Carolina, she's the daughter of Jamaican parents and one of seven siblings, a lover of dance, travel, food, and she calls herself a certified foodie. Her agency addresses language barriers through interpreting, translation, corporate education, and private lessons in Spanish and English. And she is also the author of Christine's Spanish on the Go, Volume 1, An Introduction, a manual that's designed to help native English speakers practice Spanish. Please welcome Christine Scott.
Wow, the energy. The energy. Like, I'm clapping with me, but I'm clapping. The energy. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.
You're an awesome person.
Oh, thank you.
I'm so happy.
Oh, I'm happy to do this. I'm happy to be here. I'm glad that we connected. I love that. I love that we're not even in the same continent. I love that we're even connected doing it this way.
So. Yeah. Yes. How are you?
I'm well. I've been busy, but trying to balance it. It's so important to find that time for fun. So I have. I'm proud of myself. I've made time for fun these past few weeks.
Okay.
So I'm well.
And you're in South Carolina.
Oh. I am in South Carolina. Yes. Mm.
How's the weather there?
Hot. The average has been in the 90s, and I think that's pretty high for. Even though it's summertime here, that's been hot even for us. Okay. So a lot of less outdoor activities and people are finding ways to beat the heat by being inside. But I have been outside.
Okay.
So it's a lot of electrolytes. Yeah. Breaks. But I've been good, yeah.
I love it. I'm here and it's been raining here in Paris the past few days. You know, we just had the Olympics, with the opening ceremony yesterday. Did you hear about that?
I was going to ask you, I was like, it all clicked recently. I'm like, he's there where the Olympics are.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend who moved there recently and she's American. Now she's over there with all the festivities. I think it's so cool. So what happens for you being, you know, being there, you're a resident, you're living there. You're no longer a tourist.
Mm-mm.
So how is it there for those living in Paris during this time with the Olympics?
Well, behind the scenes part, it's very chaotic because on the TV and stuff, you see like it looks really good and really put together, like the stadium and how they're able to use the different monuments and make it look nice and Olympic theme. It looks really good. But on the behind the scenes, like for me, just commuting day to day, it's really, really chaotic. Like a lot of the train stations are closed that I take. So I have to do a lot of detours when I'm trying to get to work or get to where I need to get to. You know, the tourists is a lot of tourists, more than usual, because Paris is already like a big tourist spot, but it's so much more than usual. And so now there's a lot of security. And there's actually security from different countries. Like they're all over. They're not just security, like France police. There's like security from US, security from Germany, like from different countries. They're all here. So, and they're all in the metro. They're all at every station. There's people around to point and guide you where you want to go. If you want to go to this monument, that monument, but also they're like closed too, because a lot of the monuments are shut off for the Olympics. So they're doing a lot of games around them, like especially the Eiffel Tower. So it's something interesting to see. Yesterday, I saw it on TV. I watched the whole opening ceremony from the beginning to the end. It was spectacular, honestly. Right. Like to see the color, it made me feel really proud to be living here. I was like, wow, like I'm this. What a time to be alive!
The world wants to be where you all are, so I think it's cool. Like I was like, I'm jealous, I'm honest, but no, I think it's cool. I love the Olympics. So the fun fact, there are two sports that I love watching for the Olympics, and that's track and field, and that's swimming.
Mm.
I'll get like all into it, and gymnastics. I like stop everything. I'll sit down and like really watch it like a movie. Mm-hmm. And so my idea of the Olympics is very nostalgic for me, because it's people, you know, who knows how hard they had to fight to get
right.
that point, which a lot of them did, whether they had, you know, their family was wealthy or not, it was still going to be a fight because they're looking at your ability now. If you made it there, some level, you really had to fight to get that spot. And so just watching that competition at such a high level, for me, is so inspiring. Even if I never try anything, like sometimes it motivates me to kind of get off the couch, right? But I love to watch it. So
I love to see like the representation that's there. And I look at people like Simone Biles and Sha'Carri Richardson, like that they're up there. And there's a lot of billboards here in Paris with their face all on it. And I just love it, like just to see the representation and people out there doing their thing, and they're representing our country, and they're here in Paris.
And they're proud to be here too. Like I've seen the pride. They're like, they're like, you know, I'm from all over, but I'm happy I'm here. And it's like, together. Like that's the, it gives me this different type of energy. So I think it's cool.
Oh yeah. Would you ever come here?
I'm sorry?
Would you ever come to Paris? Would you?
I would. I would. And now like I have like a really good friend of mine who moved there recently, her and her husband relocated, uprooted their entire lives, and they're in Paris. I think they're in France. They might not be in Paris, but they're in France. Even like just somewhere that I can go. Now I know of you, but I didn't know anybody before. So I think for me, it was like, I can go, but I would go for like an experience with the group, or I would go to visit somebody that's there. I'm a big, like, I'll travel and visit somebody. It kind of forces me to book the trip. So, I would.
Okay. Well, when you come, I'll give you the grand tour en français.
Merci beaucoup. I probably butchered that.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So, speaking of French and languages, you are fluent in Spanish.
Yes.
How did you get to this point? What is your origin story? Where did it all start for you?
Thank you. Thank you for asking. Whew. Get that question a lot, by the way. and I'll just start by saying that living in the southeastern United States, where a lot of people are aware of Afro-Latinos, people who look like us, who are native Spanish speakers, but we're still not there yet in the U.S. So I get that question pretty regularly from native Spanish speakers that I serve and from English speakers. Like, how did you learn? Because when they find out that I'm not a native, now they have more questions. So I started by accident. I was in high school. I believe I was a sophomore or junior in high school. And at my high school, it was not culturally diverse.
Okay.
You would say racially it was diverse, black and white, but my surroundings growing up in Columbia, South Carolina, was their parents were from South Carolina, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, and a lot of them didn't travel outside of the state. So you're really talking about the culture being South Carolina, pretty much, almost everywhere I went. And I remember being in a U.S. history class, of all places, and I had a classmate to my right, and I reached over, I wanted to ask her a question. I think I was probably wanting to borrow a pen or something. I don't even remember the question, but what I do remember very clearly is that she did not understand my question, and it was a simple question. And it really rocked my world, Anthony, because I wasn't used to even having language barriers in my day-to-day life back then. Did not speak any other languages besides English, and it took me a minute to realize that she didn't understand what I was asking her because of her lack of knowledge in the native English. So when I finally realized that, I started to help her in class. It just happened organically. For example, I would say, hey, we're on this page. And she was really just struggling through it. She was really just going to force herself, immerse herself. And that's how she was learning English. We became friends. We got to know each other outside of the classroom, but we still didn't speak the other's language. So how are we going to communicate? And that was a crash course in life and things not always being like laid out for you. But I will tell you the cool part of the story is that within a year of knowing each other, my Spanish improved. I was already taking Spanish classes, but I wasn't that into it. But now I was. So I think I had a reason. I know what's going on. And I became so nerdy about it. I'm very proud to say I'm a language nerd. And her English improved in a year.
Oh, amazing. So you had a language power really early on.
It was really, it was a cool experience. People ask me where I learned Spanish, and the answer is not outside of the U.S. The answer is where I grew up, South Carolina. Mm. And so that's when the light bulb came off for me, and I said, hey, I'm going to try to see how far I can go with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I continued to practice with natives. That's my biggest tip for anyone listening to this is if you have a colleague, a friend, a love interest, someone that you know and trust, even if they speak English or your native language, if it's not Spanish, if they're a native Spanish speaker, encourage them to speak with you in their native language, Spanish, mm-hmm. or whatever the language is that you're trying to learn. If that's their native language, ask them to switch it up to that native tongue. And I would encourage that highly to practice. So that's really how I learned to speak it. I did study it officially. I did major in it, but learning to speak it, I had to practice with natives.
I think it's a lot in that. It's a lot of power in speaking with native speakers, because I think a lot of times, at least from what I learned when I was learning Spanish in high school, is that U.S. Spanish is different from like actual Spanish in other countries, right? For example, I think of, you know, we learn how to say in Spanish, how to say, how much does it cost? ¿Cuánto cuesta? Which you can say that. But I realized in my time in Costa Rica that I rarely heard ¿Cuánto cuesta? I heard ¿Cuánto vale? And so it's like, oh, learning how to switch things up and learning from what native speakers say can be a different level than like taught Spanish. So I think that's a really good point in speaking with native speakers and exchanging your languages, because you was able to teach her English too, right?
Yeah, but not on purpose. It happened through the hard knocks of life, just trying to get to know each other. So that's really what motivated me, because I realized I wasn't even trying. She was observing me. I would say things because English was the only language I knew. And she would capture it. We would go to the gas station together. She had a car, by the way. I don't think I'm going to tell the story. She had a car. I didn't. She didn't know how to pump her own gas. So we would drive around together, and I would teach her how to pump her gas, even though I was the one without the car. So just little things like that. She was really learning on the fly. We would go out to eat together, this and that.
You had different situations where you had to bring out those language skills.
Yeah. Okay. And this was me talking to her in English. Mm-hmm. So again, we were learning as we went. So right. I just thought it was a cool story.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's my story. It's unique, but here I am. So I'm grateful.
Yes. That's beautiful. I also started in high school.
I was getting ready to ask you the same question. Spit right back out to you. I would love to hear this. Yes.
I also started in high school as well. I remember I had a fabulous teacher in my high school, and I took Spanish for the first time. And it was just because our school required us to take Spanish. I think every high school does that these days, is like you have to take two language courses to graduate. And so I just took Spanish just because it's just the language that, you know, I knew of more. I think we also offered French, which is crazy because I was like, now I don't want to learn French. And it's like, I'm living in Paris now. Crazy how life just, you know, goes around. But so at that time, I was like, yeah, okay, I know a little bit of Spanish. I heard about it, yeah. So I took Spanish, and I found myself really, really liking it in high school. Like, and it was just Spanish 1, and it was something that I found myself really catching on really quickly. And other people in my class, they were struggling with it. And I was like, you're not understanding this? Like, it's not easy for you? Like, this is making sense to me. But it wasn't for other people, and I recognized that I had something there, and I wanted to learn it more. And so when I got to college, I attempted to learn it in my first year, like at my first major. But I was in the ROTC, and there was a sergeant there that asked me what I wanted my major to be in. And then I told him, oh, no, no, maybe Spanish. And, you know, me being 18, young and naive and just, you know, fresh out of high school and a first generation college kid, all of those things. I was like, Spanish? And he was like, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to do in Spanish? Maybe you should be a STEM major, you know, where there's more money and there's more job security. Why would you just want to be in Spanish, you know? And after he said that to me, it really sent me on a spiral of like just not knowing what I wanted to do, and but still always interested in Spanish. I think that's the thing with language learning. And when you develop a passion for language learning, it doesn't ever leave you. So I ended up changing my major 4 times throughout my whole college career, and from computer science to business administration, and then criminal justice with a Spanish minor, until somebody that came into my class promoting a study abroad opportunity to Costa Rica. And I was like, oh, I've never been to Costa Rica before, but I really want to travel. I really want to go. And so I wrote a scholarship. I applied to the Benjamin A. Gilman Scholarship, which is something very, very key for people who do not, who have never studied abroad before. It's a scholarship, Benjamin A. Gilman, that it's really good for first time people who have never been out of the country before and who want to travel abroad for the first time. So I wrote my heart out on that, and I put out all the stops and told them everything about me. I said, I'm a Black, I'm first generation, I'm the oldest of 6, you know, we have no money. I have a dream, I love Spanish, and I really want to travel for the first time. And so I'll never forget that I was in the elevator in my college dorm, and I opened my email and it said, congratulations. And I just screamed, I was like, I'm going to Costa Rica.
Oh my goodness.
We can talk about this too, because I know you have an experience in Costa Rica also. But I would just say that experience is what motivated me to change my major for the 4th time to just Spanish, and then a specialization in international business. And that's where it took me. So that's like from high school all the way up until like the end of college when I graduated with my bachelor's in Spanish.
I love it, and I also love the story of the pivot. I love that you went from having someone discourage you through Spanish to having someone actually ignite that passion that you actually had kind of in there still by talking into your class to discuss the opportunity for study abroad.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like a dream deferred.
Right.
It kind of simmered down from the sergeant, and then you had another opportunity. And because you got approved for the scholarship, it allowed you to go on this trajectory of your life. I love that. That up about my studies, we have some similar things. So I did major in Spanish, but I didn't start out with the Spanish major. I also changed my major. I told myself I want to be a psychologist from forever.
Okay.
Where I was in grade school. So you got to pick a major. And I'm always fascinated about why people do what they do and how they think. Right. I'm supposed to be passionate, still fascinated, still to this day. This is before I even started learning Spanish or anything. And so I started, even me graduating from high school being bilingual at a basic level, I still was focusing on psychology as a major. And I believe it was psychology major, Spanish minor, if I'm not mistaken. And then I loved psychology, but I was just so into the Spanish classes. And I was like, if I'm into it this much and psychology is becoming kind of a chore.
Yeah.
Let me just switch it. And so I finally switched it. Wish I had kind of kept some of those studies and looking back on it, but I just put all chips in Spanish with the concentration and focus on international studies. But I love where I am today as far as the passion I have for it. But I also changed my major. And so here we are on this road, this interesting road that we are in.
How many times did you change your major?
I did change it one time. Okay. I still wish I had did some things differently, and just going back to me still loving psychology, there's a way you can kind of dabble in both, but you know, you live and learn. Since the good thing about my college is now since I've graduated, they've added more programming for interpreting translation in that field. It's very hard back then. There was like one class.
Nice.
So you had that one class that semester that touched on interpreting, and then that was it for the entire study. So now they have people who can get certifications, and like, for example, for educational interpreting for schools.
Right.
Or after taking the course, you get a certificate, all kinds of wonderful things where you don't have to enroll as a full-time student to benefit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know people will take advantage of that. I would love to have had that, but I'm glad they have it versus like, why can't it be me? No, I'm on my path that I feel like I'm led to be on. That's great. And I love that the school has improved, because I was kind of on my own way, and there wasn't a lot of us. In any race around trying to specialize in and do things in interpreting and translations back then. Mm-hmm. To be fair, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do even when I changed my major. I just knew I was more passionate about Spanish.
Okay. What kind of classes did you take when you was in school, when you decided to major in Spanish?
Great question. So at my college, when you are a language major, even if you were an English major, you had to take at least one or two other languages. So it forced me to look outside of Spanish, and I ended up studying, during my time there, I studied Mandarin Chinese for 2 semesters. That was fun, but I only had to say one sentence and maybe no or yes or something. But anyway, try today. I did take French. At one point, I had a little French under my belt. I knew a little French. But you lose it. You don't use it, you lose it. So I just, even like a video like of me, we had a project where I had to like say some sentences and I recorded myself, and I got a high grade on it, and that was all in French. So I studied Mandarin Chinese and French during my time there. I've taken, other classes. Thankfully, the math kind of fizzled out after like the first year or two. That's my favorite subject. But a lot of Spanish film was one of my favorite classes, Spanish film.
Oh, I took that class too. I took a Spanish film class too, I remember.
I loved it. This class focused on Spain. So it wasn't just films in Spanish, it was like films from Spain. And I learned so much. I learned about Penelope Cruz and her influence, and Almodovar. I think I forgot the other part of the director's name, but we watched a lot of his films, and he was I think he's Academy Award winning director. I realized very quickly that films in the U.S. aren't always the best films in the world. There's some really good stories out here. It was very eye opening. So yeah, a lot of literature classes as well, and we had a whole class of Don Quixote. And it was just interesting. And yeah, very, very diverse classes there culturally as well.
Did you take like a translation class or anything like that? I
Back
took
when I was in college, they did have very few and slim far between. They had this one interpreting course for like one semester, and that was it. So a lot of my learning happened after graduation from college for
Okay, I see.
translation.
I took a class. I took a train techniques of translation course, and that's what it was called. That was a really, really, really fun class. It was a lot of translating documents and stuff, but I really loved it. And I also took like a film class too. We would watch movies and talk about it in Spanish, and also because I was an international business major, a minor, or the specialization was in international business. I took business in Spanish too. And that led me to do like another study abroad to Panama, where we did like supply chain management in Panama City. It was like a Costa Rica Panama City like joint study abroad thing, but it was like sustainability and business, and that led me to do another like my last study abroad in 2019 there. But that's what I was doing too. I was taking like those type of Spanish classes in college. It was really cool.
Yeah,
Like,
I have a question for you. So with the translation, which I would have loved a class like that, where did you study that? Was it outside of the US, in the States?
That was at my school at Georgia State. That I was at my undergrad was at Georgia State, and there they offered, well, one of the courses under my what do you call it, like your plan, like your graduation things. Oh, like
No.
the student advisors tell you that you have to take those classes. One of them was something called Techniques of Translation, and I had a really nice professor. She was a very older woman who I think she was a former interpreter, and then she became like she just is just like a college professor. I think that was her story. But we would translate documents, and we would it would be a little challenging because it would be like, very professional words, but we would have to translate it. We do presentations and different things. I remember studying so much for that class and like getting one of the highest grades in the class. Okay, like making 95, 97s on my work. I was like, ah, yes. So that was that. Yeah, that was a time. That was really, really, really fun.
So, a question for you. What's your most memorable class that you took outside of the US?
Ooh, honestly,
I'll sip on that.
I forgot to get my coffee. I appreciate the question. I think my most memorable class had to be my business class that I took in Costa Rica in April. Was you said outside of you said inside or outside of?
Outside of the US, like abroad.
Yes. Okay. So in Costa, I did a study abroad trip for a semester in April of 2019. Okay. And in that trip, one of the classes I took was business in Spanish, because in I set up the business, specializing in business, international business. And so this was, and you're familiar with Costa Rica. So you, you know, we can get into it because I love talking about Costa Rica. there's one of the cities called Cartago. It's a place that our class went to for like an excursion. And so in there, we were talking to the different, the manager of this this company that was called NutriSnacks, where they made like different healthy snacks, healthy alternatives for you to eat cookies and crackers and stuff like that, right? But we went there to talk to the boss, like the, he was, I don't know if he was the founder, but he was like the top manager, right, of the whole warehouse. And so we went to talk to him and see how he does business and how he moves and how he does everything and the production and the packaging, all the behind the scenes stuff. And it was really cool, all in Spanish, of course. And what really made that memorable is because something came out of it more than just us going there. I remember it was a very small class, and he had told me, he was like, "Hey, your Spanish is really good. Let's exchange contacts, right?" And so we exchanged contacts, and then he wanted me to teach his staff Spanish, because he knew I like my Spanish level was really good, and I'm a native English speaker. So, wanted me to teach his staff English, right? Because he knew I was a good had a really good level of Spanish, and I'm a native English speaker, and so he saw a lot of value in me, and I was like, okay, you know, mind you, like, I'm just here to learn Spanish. I went to Costa Rica just for, you know, just to learn Spanish and take courses abroad. I didn't come for a job, but I was like, yeah, okay, sure. And so he paid me in cash. And next thing I knew, he was sending Ubers to my mama tica. Mama tica, you know, is that's the name we give for the host mom.
Yeah, la madre de la casa. La madre de la casa.
La casa de mama tica. So I was getting Uber sent to my mama tica's house, and I would go there to the place to the in Cartago, because I was living in San Jose, and I would go to Cartago. And I would be there just teaching them English. Like, I would just be talking to them. He said, like, you don't have to prepare anything, a lesson or anything. Just talk to us. We want to hear your American accent and see if we can understand and ask questions, trying to just practice our like conversational English. And so I'm just like, I remember I was talking about, like, I don't know, random things. I was just talking and talking and talking. But I was like, this is so cool. Like, I'm just talking to y'all about, like, random things. And this is in Costa Rica. This is a job. You're paying me in cash. I'm taking classes abroad. Like, I was living for it. So that's, for me, that's the most memorable moment.
It's un sueño. It's like a dream.
Oh, yeah. Sí, la verdad es un sueño. I really appreciate that moment.
Yeah.
For you, I know you have some experiences in Costa Rica as well.
Hola, bonjour, and hello. I just want to take a moment to thank you for watching my channel, Anthony Abroad, and listening to the Afrolingo Abroad podcast. Your support means the world to me. By tuning in, you're helping uplift Black and Brown communities and empowering us to explore new languages, cultures, and opportunities for a greater purpose. I cannot thank you enough for being a part of this journey. Seriously. If you'd like to learn more about me, my story, and why this work is so important, head over to my website at anthonyabroad.com. There, you'll find my story, my why, and ways we can connect. And if you'd like to support this mission even further, you can buy me a croissant or two. J'adore les croissants. Your support helps keep this work alive and makes a difference in amplifying our voices and stories worldwide. Don't forget to like this video, subscribe to the channel, and hit the notification bell so you never miss an update. You'll always find the link to support in the show notes or in the description below. Thank you. Together, we're changing the narrative. One language and one country at a time. Adios, au revoir, and goodbye. Now let's get back to the episode.
First, and actually always study abroad experience, which is so interesting. Oh, because I love all things culture and traveling and Spanish culture, like, you know, from various different Spanish-speaking countries. And that's why I'm trying to work on that. I have some goals to visit more countries now, starting this year. But Costa Rica was my study abroad experience in undergrad. And I was there for a month. I went to the main university there, and I stayed in San Jose, I think, or San Juan. But I had the Mama Tica, and she would make me my cafecito every morning, my little coffee. They had the best coffee. I would have my, like, she was so sweet. She was so sweet. She cried when I left. Apparently, I was the first Black student, or, you know, African American, or from any country, really, that African heritage that stayed at her home. So it was a bonding moment. It was a cultural moment. Mm-hmm. So it was something that I actually, I mentioned it first. I brought it up. She was so sweet, warm, loving, but I just wanted to, I don't think she's ever traveled outside of Costa Rica, but it was a moment where I wanted her to know that it was a thing. Because she's been doing it for years, and she's hosted students from all over the world, because the program that I used wasn't just out of the U.S. Mm-hmm. So there were students from Europe that would travel there and everything. So long story short, I love Costa Rica so much. People are so nice, so warm and welcoming. And I did take two classes during that summer month there. And I learned so much there. I learned so much there. Our last week of classes, they hired a mariachi band to play. It was just so many cool moments. I can go on and on. I do have a memorable class there. One of the teachers, she made it a point to not just focus on Costa Rican history. Mm-hmm. She shared about some history from El Salvador, which is also considered part of Central America. And I learned, it was eye-opening, because she didn't like hide. She kept like some raw truth, like, this is really what happened. And she even showed us a movie about it that was filmed, and it's Puro Espanol, all in Spanish. And now, even now, as I serve as an interpreter in the medical field, if I encounter, you know, if I have patients that are from that region, I have a kind of an, it helps me with a cultural awareness and understanding. So even though I've never been to El Salvador, for example, thanks to my teacher in Costa Rica taking time out to educate us about what's happening around and not just focusing on one culture, it just allowed me to have a better awareness. Yeah. So I learned so much in a short period of time. So I'm thinking about doing an adult version, or like a non-student, a non-full-time student version of a study abroad. Now, I would love to immerse myself again in something and take a short program, even if it's for 2 weeks. So that's on my long-term to-do list. And within a year, I would love to do some kind of program, immersion program again.
There's a lot of programs out there. Well, what was the program that you used to...
I have to find it. I know that their base office was in Southern Florida.
Okay.
I do not remember the name. It has been so long. This was 2007, I want to say.
Okay.
They might age a little bit. So I want to find her, actually. I want to like send her something to let her know that she's in my mind, because I'll never forget those experiences. So anyone listening to this podcast, you know, if you have a chance to, you know, take a chance on yourself and be willing to go outside of your box, outside of your community, study abroad, try it. Grab somebody with you if you have to. Do a two-for-one deal. Maybe one person can get a scholarship, the other person pays, or whatever. If you don't feel like traveling by yourself, please try it. It's such a game changer.
You have to do it. What do you say to the people who are scared of flying? I know people who, even people in my family who are like, oh, I really want to go to this country, but I've never been on a plane before. I don't know. Like, scary.
Great question. First, I will say, going to Costa Rica for study abroad was my first time on a plane.
Mine too.
Maybe it was. Many things happened. Anyway, my life has been a whirlwind, okay? It was one of my early times going on a plane was going to Costa Rica. And I flew by myself.
Same.
My advice is that you vet the program carefully. That it's a trusted source. because a solid program for study abroad or even just traveling, they're going to have people or systems set up there where you go and you're really not all by yourself. You can meet with someone, you can check in.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are now saying that you should check in if that country has a consulate or an embassy, sorry, where you can say, hey, I'm over here, I'm from this country. Like, for example, I'm from the U.S., this country has a U.S. embassy. I just wanted to let y'all know that I'm here as a tourist. And I
come for security purposes.
There's so many ways to do that because we know that there's danger everywhere. There's danger in my backyard, right? Here in South Carolina. But my encouragement to them is regarding plane flying specifically, is the risk is much higher on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
People have to remember that. The risk is 10 times higher on the ground, if not more. So think of it that way.
That's good. That's
safe
good.
In the air. Just make sure that the company is not a random, like, I just picked anything and I'm closing my eyes. Because I think that will give you, for someone who's already nervous, if you're not somebody who's nervous, hey, go for it. If you're someone who already has reservations, then you want to go with a source that's a little more known. I think that's going to be step one. Read the reviews. Maybe find somebody who's traveled there.
Do your research.
Don't be afraid to inbox somebody on social media and you see that they've posted about that company that you're looking about. And you say, hey, you don't know me. I don't know you. But I see that you've actually used this company for travel a year ago, last week. How was it?
Uh-huh.
Hey, that's not a risk. You're not asking them. You're not trying to meet them in real life. You're not asking for their address. They're not asking you for your address. But that allows you to get some more information. So you can give it a try and be feel more comfortable traveling, whether you're going by yourself or with somebody. But definitely book a trip. Life is too short.
Book a trip.
Too much fear holds you back. For years, I was afraid of swimming.
Yeah.
Due to some scary experiences I had when I was younger. And during the pandemic, I told myself, like, I love the water. What's holding me back? And it was fear. And so I stepped out of my comfort zone, out of my box, and I hired, I vetted her. And she helped me learn how to swim during the pandemic. So I'm in my, late 30s. And here we are. I'm swimming, So definitely don't let fear hold you back. Fear will keep you from some amazing experiences.
I'm giving you some claps in the chat.
Thank you so much. I just want to share that piece to just like, hey, it's possible. Whatever is like holding you back and you know that that fear is keeping you from going to the other side, then you got to crush that. You got to find a way to crush that fear because a year is going to turn to 2 years and then you're going to be living in regret. And that's when you're going to make a lot of regret.
Right. One of my biggest things is I do not want to get to the end of my life with regrets and things like, oh, I wish when I was younger, I could have went to this. I could have did that. Oh, I wish I could have did that. I wish I could have did this. I don't want to do that. Like, while I have the idea now and while I'm young and I can move and I'm blessed to be able to do so, like, why not take advantage of everything? ¿Por qué no aprovechar todo la,
eso?
Eso. ¿Por qué no? Like, we're here and we're here for a short time. Like you said, like, let's get out of there, do it. Like I had this idea. I was like, it would be a really cool idea for me to find multilingual Black and Brown people of educators who can share their experiences and unite them on a platform to raise more awareness. I was like, that would be a cool idea. Then I was like, let's do it. Let's put the pieces together. Let me make my LinkedIn. Let me make my presence known and look good and start reaching out to people. And here we are. Here we are.
And I want to let you know, I love the branding. You have that. I don't know if it's going to change, but you have that yellow. I just remember when I think of you and your brand or what you've presented yourself so far, like, for example, on your LinkedIn, that yellow sticks out. That yellow to me was giving like inviting, friendly, ready, whatever that was, whatever you had going on. It helped. It helped that kind of like attention grabber. I'm like, oh, okay. He has positive energy. What does he have going on? So it was cool. Yeah. It was cool. I love that we got connected.
Okay. That's good feedback for me. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm just going to put it out there. That's as someone who, is in different circles in business and learning and marketing, all this stuff, that was a great one, whether it happened intentionally or not. The yellow helps. I love the yellow for your brand.
Yeah. I think also it matches me because I'm very very out there and like high energy person, very extroverted. And so I think yellow is a good bright color that's like, really out there kind of thing. So thank you. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know what time it is. And we're just sitting here chatting away. I'm good.
Okay.
So let me think here. Something I wanted to ask you. You told me how you got into Spanish and that road. You told me you took a Spanish class. So that kind of started your trajectory, right? Getting into it and study abroad. So would you say, for me, I wouldn't say it was a Spanish class that helped me speak Spanish. It was getting to know native Spanish speakers, even here in the States. Right. So would you say that you taking a Spanish class helped you speak it? Or was it when you actually went abroad?
Oh, I would 100% say when I went abroad. I would 100% say, like, it's nothing about immersion. When you're learning a language and you're in the actual country speaking the language, it's a different ball game. Even now that I'm still learning French and I'm here in Paris, like when I first got here, I could not even go to the boulangerie. And you know, on Duolingo, you have like, they teach you like, une baguette, s'il vous plaît, you know? And I go to the boulangerie and I say, une baguette, s'il vous plaît. And then, but the thing is like, what happens if there's not any baguettes left? What happens if, you know, they have this one that looks this way, is a little burnt. They have another one that looks a little too soft. And they're asking you, oh, do you want this one? You want this one? What happens like in different situations where it's just not, you know, like you're in a different type of situation that's just not a standard cookie cutter type of response.
Yeah.
And so I think the best thing, like when you go to these countries, when you get the courage to travel and you are in another country, you're forced to speak the language. You're put in situations similarly, like how you said with you and your friend earlier on, you was at the gas station, you was here, you was in school, you was at different locations. When you go to another country, you're in different locations, you're outside of your element, you're outside of your comfort zone, and you have to speak the language. You have to like push yourself to do so. So I feel like there's nothing like that. Like for me, that's what really, and that's when I was there, I realized that the Spanish that I'm learning in the US did not compare. It was a good, like, good start. It was good help. And I think you can be fluent in a language, like just taking classes and learning in your country. But if you want to go to another level, you need to go to the country. You need to live there for a little bit, maybe a month, even like a week will change your life. You go there, everyone's speaking that target language. Yeah, and you see, like, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, all right. This is not the same Spanish I was learning in the US. This is a different, that's what I was like, wait a minute.
Very humbling.
Yeah, because I went to Costa Rica thinking I was like intermediate. I was like, okay, yeah, Yeah, hablo español, sí. Sí puedo hablar español, But you get there and they're like speaking something different. It's faster. It's more colloquial. And you're like, espera.
I was humble every day there. But they were so nice about it. They were wonderful. Yeah. They were the most friendly. Like, I've had some really great experiences there, even traveling, commuting by myself.
Oh, they're good people.
In spaces where it was obvious that I wasn't a local.
Los ticos y las ticas.
Then I was like, okay, uh-huh. Pity, who knows? No, but it was really, really genuinely nice. And so every day, I would say every day my Spanish was being corrected there, but it was the best learning experience.
Right.
You have to be willing as a learner of languages, whether you're learning your you know, second one, your third one, like you're bilingual, correct?
Yes.
I love that for you. I'm bilingual one day maybe. And you have to be willing to receive constructive criticism. And it might not always come at you in the most soft packaged way, but that lesson means, hey, I'm going to get it right the next time. Right. So sometimes it's about, you know, unless they're being straight up disrespectful, I don't advocate for that. But if they're just trying to actually acknowledge the fact that what you said wasn't correct, be willing to take that and say, okay.
Oh. Because
that's what helped me learn correctly.
100%.
I'm so grateful for the corrections that I receive and receive. So receive or receive still. The non-native Spanish speaker.
Please correct me. Don't have me out here saying stuff that's not supposed to be said. I'm saying it wrong, or it might be offensive, you know, in different countries. Like, you know.
I'm with that. And like I said, if it wasn't for people being honest with me and not just smiling in my face, and it's like somebody that has something in their face and all day, nobody's told you anything. You're like, y'all are so fake to me. Y'all are not my friends for real. You know, it's not like that. If you're spent all day and everybody tells you you're doing great and they're really lying to your face, and you repeat the same kind of vocabulary or maybe offensive speech the next year because you were never corrected, would you have wanted that or somebody to be nice to you all the time?
Right.
So,
I feel the same way. And that kind of connects to like my role as a Spanish teacher in San Antonio. So after I graduated college, I chose to join Teach for America, and I chose to be in San Antonio because I wanted to pick a place where the cost of living was good and the salary was it was a good ratio between the cost of living and the salary, and a place where I could speak Spanish too. So I found San Antonio to be that place for me. And I remember like the kids there, a lot of them, they would not speak Spanish, but the ones that could speak Spanish, they would correct me too. And I welcomed that. I was a teacher who I was like, oh, okay, yeah, thank you. Okay, gracias. Uh-huh. Because I recognized that as a teacher and as an educator, you can learn as much from students as much as you teach them. It's definitely a two-way street, which I feel like not every educator feels that way. Maybe it's not that known, but like you can learn a lot from a kid that you teach as much as they teach you, you know, especially in like the language learning field.
Great.
What are your
you have no filter. It's the best, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The younger they are, the less filter they have. It's like we as adults, we got so used to having that filter to a fault sometimes. Sometimes kids are your best teachers when it comes to that stuff.
Exactly. I'm curious, like, what are your experiences? I know you have experiences being a Spanish teacher. What are your experiences teaching Spanish and having kids like that see you as a Black woman teaching Spanish? Like, what was that like?
Thank you for sharing. My introduction to using my Spanish on the job was not as a teacher. Mm-hmm. I even got that question when people learned in college when I was still studying. When I changed to Spanish, like, are you going to be a Spanish teacher? I'm like, no. It's something that I honestly did run away from. I really tried to, I saw myself using it in business. I do that, but teaching still came right back to my doorstep. So I didn't start teaching Spanish in any capacity until I opened my agency. I got the LLC in 2018, late 2018, and I went public in 2019. Mm-hmm. And then what I realized when I let the world know that I have a business, what I was thinking about was grabbing these clients that needs interpreting all the time. And, oh, I need to interpret this day, that day. Let's translate this. That was my vision for CLS, Christian mm-hmm. Language Solutions. But my biggest requests, even to this day, are people wanting to learn Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
People wanting me to teach them. So I started having adult clients. I was doing one-on-one lessons with them. And then it leaked into, oh, I heard you teach Spanish. And so I was contracted by what's called Kids Club, formerly the Boys and Girls Club of America. And they have me doing after school summer camp programs where I'm teaching elementary school kids, which going back to the no filter, I learned a lot very quickly. And someone who doesn't have kids realizing very quickly how that world can look like. Hats off to all the parents listening to this. It's been a wild ride, Anthony, to answer your question, because it's been a lot of learning as I teach, like you said. You explained it perfectly, because when I studied Spanish, it wasn't to teach. So when I teach now, I do a lot of experience-based teaching, and I keep it very practical and basic to start. It depends on who my student is. For the adult learners, it's a different ballgame. Their lessons are individualized. But for the students, I try to keep it general. I try to make it fun. Prizes are always a part of the deal. Candies are always a part of the deal, just to kind of keep them motivated. Mm-hmm.
How old are the students?
They're going to be 5K through 5th, 6th grade.
Okay.
For the summer camp. Right now I'm saying summer camp because in the U.S. We're wrapping up the summer camp series. Mm-hmm. But during the school year, it's considered an after school program. So for certain districts, when they get out of school around 3:30, they'll immediately start the after school programming with different skills, different classes. Some classes are dance. My class is Spanish. Okay. So yeah, it has been interesting. It's very, very diverse. My Spanish lessons depends on the crowd. Right. I've done some group education classes. I'll be very specific about one where it was a mental health practice, and a lot of the therapists were going to be interacting with native Spanish speakers or clients who didn't speak English, and they were wanting to, I've never had to use an interpreter before. What does that look like? And they want to be very culturally sensitive, and they want to be aware of how to navigate that conversation. So I also have a class that I train called When the Interpreter is Present. So I'm able to speak on behalf of what it looks like to have an interpreter in the room, whether they're physically in the room or virtually. I've also done basic classes for basic Spanish classes, which I call emergency Spanish. Sometimes people don't have the time to immerse themselves and to learn everything from A to Z. So right. It's phrases, common everyday phrases. I've done that for companies as well. So my Spanish teaching has been very diverse, very, what would you call it? Not the school of hard knocks, but very like lived, like happening day, like in the day-to-day grind. It's not traditional. Classes are not traditional, but I wouldn't have it any other way right now. I'm enjoying it.
Oh, they sound like they're still very effective, though. You have your own groove and how you speak and how you cater to your students. I'm curious, are your students, like, what's the general demographic of your students?
Great question. Very diverse. So a lot of the adults are considered, we say, working adults. A lot of them have families, whether it's just their spouse or spouse and kids. It's been Black American, White American. I also do teach English, so I have had native Spanish speakers request my services to teach them English, and that's from Mexico to Colombia to, I think one country was Uruguay. It was a South American country.
Okay.
And so it's been diverse there. It's interesting. A lot of people want to better the other language here in the States, so my students have been diverse. Mm-hmm. I've had students who are doctors. I have students who were working, you know, in their, for example, one of the native Spanish speakers, she's brilliant. She came to the U.S. from South America, and she was working at the cafeteria at my hospital where I work at, and we met that way. And she had all this knowledge, but a lot of her opportunities were limited because a lot of the other positions that she wanted to apply for, they were requiring English. So I was helping her work through that. And a lot of the students that would come to me for English, that's what they were wanting to advance in the American market. And they were brilliant, just needing to learn that English, better the English to give them better opportunities. So Spanish and English, diverse students, just to show you how much that language learning can connect.
Yeah.
Diverse.
I'm interested in like the adult classes that you were giving. I'm sure, so you said some of them were parents and some of them they were professionals. Because I'm thinking about how people sometimes when you're interested to learn in learning a second language, a lot of time you're saying the biggest issue is time. And you're like, but I have kids now and I have my job. I don't have time to do all these different things. And so I'm curious if you ever came across any stories or in the students that you work with, the adults, have they shared with you how they're navigating their busy life and also trying to learn Spanish or learn English with you? Or do you know any advice you can give to someone who has a busy life or they have kids or something in there?
It's tough. I'm glad you brought that up. It's tough. It's tough. Some of those same students have had those challenges, and they've had to pause classes or reschedule. It happens. Yeah. And so I also give them a safe space to not have that pressure. There's times where they've been tapped out. They're like, listen, I'm tapped out. Or we log on and I realize that they're not mentally checked in. I say, hey, as your teacher, I'll be completely honest with you. I appreciate you purchasing the class. You're not going to lose your money here. Let's reschedule because I want to benefit. I want this time to be valuable where you actually are able to capture the information. If you've had the worst day ever and you're sick or you're tired, I've had people log in and they're sick. They're physically sick. I'm like, no, that's not the kind of teacher I want to be.
Because you're not receptive of it.
Regroup and let's reschedule this class. No problem at all. There's challenges there. My tip to those who really want to learn fast another language and they're working and working adults, whether they have a family or not, they're busy because of their job. I really think immersion is still going to have to be part of the package. The whole idea of having a colleague that you already interact with, especially if they're a coworker, my goodness, that is such an advantage. If you have a native Spanish speaking colleague, ask them to switch that you trust. Ask them to only speak to you in their native tongue. If you're already seeing this person 5 days a week, that's 5 days of practice.
Yeah.
that's a hello. Yes, that's a form of immersion. I told this on a previous podcast, a podcast that I did last winter. And I said, you know, if you're able to even take a week to travel where that week you're immersed, you said it earlier today, a week can still change your life.
Mm-hmm.
You can come back even with a level of motivation to make the time.
Yeah.
I think that even when someone is so busy, being able to force yourself to be part of something, even if it's for a week, it might look like, hey, this is normally my vacation and I normally go to Jamaica, but I'm going to go to the DR
mm-hmm.
and do this program for a week. Mm-hmm. Because the truth is, busy as we are, the truth is we make time for the things we want and you have to prioritize it. I have a business. I'm still considered an employee. I do this and do that and juggle all these jobs, but I made the time to learn how to swim.
Yes.
It was a sacrifice, right? And it's still something I was scared of. I could have just said, no, I'm not ready. I'm nervous and just kept working. So I do feel like you just have to make the time immersing yourself. If you're being more practical and say, hey, you know, I don't have the funds to try to do an immersion program. I'm day to day. How can I learn this? If you can, you know, download a software that you see that has been proven with reviews and tell yourself that I'm going to give myself an hour or 30 minutes or 10 minutes or 5 minutes every day. Mm-hmm. And work on that program, that software to practice, whether it be Duolingo or not, or something more expensive, but give yourself that consistency. It really comes down to consistency. 5 minutes every day can still get you far.
Oh,
even
yeah.
If you're working, you don't even have to travel. You don't have to find a Spanish-speaking friend.
Mm-hmm.
Just taking that time every day, or 5 days a week, or 3 days a week, can still move the needle forward. I'm telling you that because I met people who learned how to speak Spanish in that way. Mm-hmm. I knew a gentleman who he was able to have basic level Spanish skills and he would still utilize interpreting services. That's how I met him because I was an interpreter for him. But he was like, I did Duolingo for 5 minutes every day for a year.
Oh yeah.
The free version of Duolingo, yeah. 5 minutes every day for a year. Straight up white American male, born and raised here, families from the States, learn Spanish at a level that I would say that's competent, and he sounds mm-hmm. good because he was doing 5 minutes every day for a year of Duolingo. I'll never forget that story. There's so many ways to learn another language. So please take that with you. You know, if you know anybody who's learned it, ask them how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. My way is very, very different.
Yeah, and I definitely.
So many ways to learn.
I definitely love that piece. You know, one of the things that I'm doing right now is I'm teaching English to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Benin, Africa. Yay! Through the Peace Corps. and so I also meet with a lot of professional, thank you for the claps. I also meet with a lot of professional, sorry?
I need to change my clap color, but yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm using the brown skin tone because
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I need to find that one. I need to fix that.
So, you know, I'm also working with a lot of professionals also who are also language learners as well. So they, their native language is French and I'm teaching them English. And so a lot of them have shared with me how they're learning English and some of them are watching the news. Some of them are, yeah, they have apps on their phone. I think like Duolingo, but they do a lot more than that. Like they change the language to their phone, like the settings in their phone to English, which is something that I vote for too. Like my phone right now is in French.
Oh.
And when I was in my Spanish bag, my whole Spanish era, my phone was in Spanish. Everything I own was in Spanish. Even my car, I changed my car settings to Spanish. So it told me like, when I need gas, when I'm going too fast or whatever it is, it's all that is in Spanish. I learned like different Spanish words that way too. So I think basically it's like living your life over again in that language, right? Doing what you can, like you said, like at least 5 minutes a day to just learn new skills or just relearn things that you already know in that language. So I really feel that. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of Yeah, that's what a lot of them were telling me that they were doing in the foreign affairs officials that I'm teaching with. That's what they were saying that they're doing and they're trying. They don't have a lot of people to practice with. I know that's another issue is that they don't have a lot of people in a lot of English speaking people to practice English with. So that's why when I teach them English, they're very attentive. They're great, very grateful for that. And I'm grateful to teach them. But it's like sometimes, like I think a lot of times you can still do what you can, or do the best that you can do, but just being consistent and making the initiative to learn the language, it will get you far, right? Yes.
I want to encourage people. I hope between those listening to Anthony, listening to his wonderful story about how he's reached continents with an S, I think that's so amazing. and my advice from what people I've met who've learned Spanish in non-traditional ways, that you can start somewhere. It's not a black and white way to learn a language. There's so many different ways to learn. Also listening to music, radio stations, or I heard about that. I've met people who've learned by Spanish by listening to like reggaeton, which is a lot of slang in that type of music. I thought was interesting, reggaeton. But I met somebody who learned Spanish by listening to the hip hop version of like the reggae mix of Spanish music.
You see, I'm like, I guess like a millennial, is that what it is? And I remember when I was teaching Spanish in San Antonio, a lot of the kids were really stuck on Bad Bunny. And I was like, I don't really feel like that's my vibe. I don't really understand what he's saying. It's like, it's Puerto Rico, and I don't understand it's a different type of Spanish. It's very fast and different. But, you know, I was like, no, I feel like I want to know who is the most streamed artist in these different languages. So for Spanish, I was like, okay, Bad Bunny, Karol G, like, okay, they're out there. These are they're all reggaeton. So yeah. Like that is like that type of genre. But I mean, you could still be like, be in the know. It's a woman named Aya Nakamura. She is like she's a French artist, and she's the most streamed here. So I listen to a lot of her music too. It is very like very, very mainstream. And so I like that you plugged in the music part, because that's very key too.
I think this conversation is so full of nuggets. So if someone listens to this, even if they have like no knowledge of any other language but their native language, I hope that they can take away something from our conversations. They can say, I'm going to try that. I want people to take this conversation and actually be willing to try something if they have a goal in mind that they haven't started.
Oh, yeah.
And stopped it to pick it back up.
Same. So. I know we're a little bit over time. How are you on? You're good? Okay.
Good.
Okay. So I want to ask you about what you're doing now with Christine Language Solutions and your business. So I know, so you work with other clients with interpreting and language learning and stuff like that. Can you speak more about what you do with your company, with your agency?
Sure. Thank you for that. So Christine Language Solutions, we consider ourselves a full language services agency. Everyone is remote, so we're able to serve in and outside of our local area, which is I love so much. So for the interpreting side of things, we can do conference interpreting. We can do it where we're virtual, or we can be there in person. I've had assignments out of the state where they required interpreter to be there in person. We also provide what we consider consecutive, where there's a back and forth exchange. The interpreter is allowed time for pause. So the native speaker says a few sentences, and then the interpreter fills in the blank, and vice versa, where with the interchange of the languages, that conversation of interpreting is also held. It can be a one-time meeting. It can be up to the level of a conference. We're in schools. We help private medical practices. As far as translations, we are at the competency level to assist with contracts, surveys, anything that business needs translated into another language so they can serve more of the community. Very passionate about that, and we're able to serve in that need as well. Documents, high-level documents. We just wrapped up a three-week national conference. This conference was months in the making. Before they started the actual conference, they had documents they needed translated from English into Spanish so that their listeners and their readers are able to have access to it in their native language, a language of strength, I would say. And we were able to provide that service as well as be live for the actual interpreting session where we're kind of speaking Spanish while the presenters are speaking in English. We did that for 3 weeks. Thankfully, we had some breaks in between, a day here, a week in here, a week there. We needed it. But we're able to serve in that level. We're able to also provide group education classes. If you needed something, where you want to be able to vet. You might want to interview someone for a job, and you're wanting to, you know, test the level of that language, if it's something for interpreting, or if it's something where you're an employer, you need to hire somebody, and there might be a language barrier there, but for their skill set, they don't have to speak the main language, but you want to have an interview, we also help facilitate that. So our services are varied. We've had people need one-time projects for certain things. We teach English and Spanish as well at the individual and group level as well. Those will be remote. Those lessons are remote, unless you are local, and then we'll facilitate that on site at your business.
I love this. And what motivated you to start this agency in the first place? What was the reason behind starting this type of platform and offering these services?
Great question. When I was an undergrad, I started to notice the field of interpreting through a friend of mine who, fun fact, she's a native French speaker because she's from Cameroon.
Ah, okay.
And she moved to the States and was learning English and Spanish at the same time. She learned Spanish by watching telenovelas with subtitles. She's going to a center to learn English officially. When I met her, she already knew English and Spanish, and we bonded on that. But she was interpreting for an agency making $20 an hour without a college degree, without a certification. This was over 15 years ago. And so I said, "Ooh, wow, that's cool." But for me, it wasn't really about the money. It was just the idea that she was doing something that I found myself curious to learn. Mm-hmm. I said, "Hey, wait, I'm here studying that whole full college student experience, you know, ramen noodles and the whole thing. And she's out here just like working, doing it." I'm like, "Should we switch places? Like, what's going on?" And I realized that I was so curious, because what was happening is that dream of actually wanting to serve was stirring up inside of me. Before I graduated from college, I did know that I wanted to have an agency. I wanted to have a place that considered a hub where local businesses can utilize services for main languages needs of the community. So I thought it a bit more of a community-based business. I'm still big on community, but I love that we've been able to branch out. So I consider ourselves, we still passionate about serving communities locally and beyond. So we're serving your community. It might not be our community, but we're able to help you with that. So I had a passion to help serve, but when I graduated from college, I wasn't automatically doing that need, the business idea. I started to take it seriously in 2017. 2017 is when I just told myself, I'm going to go from just being a bilingual employee, which is what I was doing after college. They would hire me because I was bilingual. I had this job and that job, and sometimes be the only one in the group that spoke amongst my employees, colleagues that spoke Spanish, to using those tools learning on the job to finally be able to have a better awareness when I started my agency. I just decided that life was just too short, and I started to feel replaceable just as general in corporate America, just as an employee. And I had that tug in 2017, and I decided to kind of go with it. And I started to reach out and to colleagues in the field of interpreting. And I attended my first interpreting conference in early 2018, all the way across the country from East Coast, where I live, to the West Coast, to California, all by myself on my own dime to attend this major language services conference.
And talk about betting on yourself.
That was, yes, bet on yourself, guys. And that was my game changer, because I got so many tools. I felt stuck, to be honest with you. I knew I wanted to do something, but I didn't know how to go about doing it. Conferences are a game changer for a field that someone might want to break into, going to a conference specific to that field, whatever it is, because I was able to get tools that I needed, take it back over to where I live, and actually get started in my business. And early 2018, going to the conference, by the end of 2018, I had my LLC.
Yes. Love that. See what happens when you bet on yourself. I love that you had a goal in mind, you had a dream set, and you said, "You know what? I'm just going to go. I'm going to book the flight and I'm going to go."
Literally.
A lot of times we just need to book the flight and go, right?
Literally.
And I love that you do that, cuz I feel like I definitely relate to that in my move here, cuz a lot of people see, Anthony's living in Paris now. Like, yay. And I'm like, yeah, like, it's cool. But also, like, to actually get here, that took a lot of drive and a lot of, like, you know, guts to do, right? Like, it wasn't really just the easiest thing to just, because I had to sell, I sold my car, I sold all my furniture, I sold everything, and I quit my job, and I was really stable being a Spanish teacher. in the US, but I just knew I wanted something more for me. I just knew I had this passion to learn a third language, and it happened to be French, because I was really inspired by something else that I'm a part of, which is called CISV, is an international camp. And I was spending some time in Indonesia with some kids who were bilingual, or some were even trilingual, and some spoke four languages. And I was like, wow, like, I was very CISV. Yeah, it's a nonprofit. It's an international nonprofit organization that is really, really phenomenal with it. For me, it was a free trip, because I took kids from the U.S. to Indonesia. And in that camp, there were other people from other countries. So there were people from Greece, from Finland, from Indonesia, of course, and from Japan. And they all had their kids from their country. So this was a big, immersive international camp for everyone involved. And we talk about really big issues like, like abortion, like climate change, police brutality, like big issues in efforts to get the kids who are like, they're like 12 to 16, like there's different programs. And like, they're really young, 12 to 16, I believe. And we get them to start thinking about solutions to these big worldwide issues that are facing everywhere, not just the US, and start brainstorming different solutions and different ideas with them, and helping through activities and through different types of games and stuff like that, because there's kids, so still to make it fun for them, but also very, very educational. Yeah. And so in that camp, there was a few people there who could speak, a few people as in a few of the kids who could actually speak two, three, and sometimes four languages. And I was like, wow, my gosh, you know, I was content being a bilingual, because I was like, no one else in my family speaks Spanish or any other language. So like, I'm good here. Uh-huh. But then I started to get hungry for more. I started being like, you know what, why just limit myself to Spanish? Like, you know, so in the beginning of August beginning of 2023, I started to make it my New Year's resolution to learn French, because I was just like, you know, that's me picking up. If you remember, like, I was telling you about how my school taught French and Spanish, my high school. And I was like, French. So I was like, let me pick that back up. Plus, like you, in college, I also took a semester of French in college, because we had to do it too. And but I was really just like, I wasn't really interested in it. I just did it because I was like, okay, whatever. So I was like, okay, this is the next language that I have the most experience in. And so I decided to learn French by myself, and just like really just like starting with Duolingo, you know, starting with the basics, you know, une baguette s'il vous plaît, and just like that. And then I went on to Italki, which is like an app that you can use to talk to people. And it was really good. I found somebody for a good price. It was really cheap. Like, the lessons were like $20, $30 per lesson. Like, it was really good. Like, and I was doing that and finding a native speaker who was living in Paris, or I think he was just in France. And, we were speaking, he was helping me practice, until like, I decided to quit my job, because I thought I was going to do the Peace Corps. But that didn't work out. And so plan B was like, well, I got time and I have savings. Let me just do it, right? If I'm going to learn a third language, if I'm going to learn French, why not learn it in Paris? Like, you know, it's just like, it just goes together.
go ahead. I don't want to cut you off. Oh, no, go ahead. Please finish your thought. It's a question about that, so I'll let you finish it. I won't forget.
Okay. So I found a program for April, just a month program. Like, that was like my little test to see, you know, how it was. I looked online, I did some research, and it was like a third party company that was like, you know, helping me move abroad. Which, side note, I feel like in retrospect, like, the best thing to do is just to go to the country, to go to the website, like the school that you want to research, a school you want to learn French from, or any language from, and see if that school itself have like study abroad programs, and not like do a third party company, because it could be more expensive that way. That's what I learned. Like, I did this in Costa Rica, and then I did it again in France. And I was like, I could have just went to the school, like the school's website, the university itself, and see if they had international programs or study abroad programs, and then pay them directly and not a third party company. But, you know, I think that's like a cheaper way. But anyway, so I did that for April, and in the time. I really loved it. Like I fell in love with Paris. It was my first time in Europe. It was amazing, like just to say the least. I also fell in love here. Like I met my part. Okay.
Okay. You are all the way in. Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about immersion.
You
we're
did. Talking about Edward. Okay.
You know, wow. they call it the city of love. And, yeah. And I'm like, yep, mm-hmm. I agree. That's what it is. And so I met my partner here, and we are I came back after April. I went back to the U.S. and I was like, oh, I love it too much. I have to go back. And so I was doing a lot of research and I found another school, the one that I'm at now, learning French. And the one that I will be at next year, next in September, oh, with my master's. Okay. In international education. Yeah, so I took it. Thank you for that. And so I just really just bet on myself. Like I knew that this is what I wanted to do. And so the drive was louder than the money that it cost. The drive, the passion was louder than the doubt. The passion, it was louder than all of the like, oh no, but what if it doesn't work out? Oh, but like what if I don't, what if French is too hard for me to learn? What if the people here are racist? Like what if it's not, you know, all of those things. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna bet on myself. And I'm gonna go and I'm gonna see about it. And I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna make the most of it. And here we are. So I like that piece that you said about going to California, betting on yourself and taking that initiative to do some self-education and it working out and you making your own agency and helping people. That is truly amazing.
Thank you. I'm so proud of both of us, really. And thanks for this platform, this opportunity to highlight these voices that honestly, sometimes you kind of have to create your own lane to highlight the voice instead of waiting on like a certain source to say, hey, when are they going to knock on my door? I need to just continuing to message them every, I'm referring to even you starting this podcast journey. I'm proud of you, all that you're working on, podcast.
Thank you.
Highlight voices and who knows what's going to come of it. You know, it's us two living in two different continents. We having things in common. Who knows what this platform can do for others listening in and how it can inspire them. You never know what it's. So I'm glad. Shout out to you. Without rambling too much, shout out to you for being willing to say, I'm going to start it. Just like you told yourself, I'm going to move. Or whatever you say, I'm going to just do it. And something always waiting for you on the other side. Mm-hmm. I have a final question for you. I do need to go sooner than I thought. Okay. than I expected I would have to. But one of my final questions to you, specifically regarding French, I was curious about this. How was it in the beginning of your journey with French, dealing with native French speakers?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not referring to like italki. I'm talking about actually being in circles where there are native French speakers there, mm-hmm. and you making mistakes or not getting things perfect. How has that been feedback wise? Back to you, has it been well received? Have you been kind of shunned? Has it been kind of what was the experience? Was it positive or negative? If you don't mind sharing, I'm personally curious, how was your journey with speaking French and actually using French in the real world?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Thank you for the question. I feel like, you know, generally people would say about French people that they are impatient, which I agree, and that they are not so welcoming to foreigners, which I feel to that is like, maybe depends on the person. Because I've seen a lot that people would be like, oh, you don't speak French, je parle français. And they're just like, oh, like, you know, disgusted that you don't speak French and you can't communicate with them. I've seen that in action, I have. But for me personally, I feel like a lot of times people are really happy to get to know me, maybe because my energy and I'm like, hey, or maybe because I'm from the US and, you know, American culture is so big internationally. Like once you go travel, you see like, oh, wow, a lot of people know a lot about the US. A lot of people know what's going on. Like even like the elections right now, people know that it's Trump and Kamala Harris. They know a lot about in other countries. So like our culture is very present in a lot of places. And so when I meet people and they're like, so you speak English. Okay, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, I'm from the US. And then they ask me what state, and like they talk about, oh, I want to go to New York. And they all know you, they all know New York, they all know Hollywood, you know, the typical places. And so I feel like it's been well received. I remember like I've been in different places, and like even at the Boulangerie, different tourist places, I would say, or like the mall or something like that, where there's a lot of people there and they see a lot of people. Like I remember one time I was buying some oil and I was buying some stuff at this oil place, and the person there was the clerk. She was asking me questions about where I was from, and because I was trying to order and or do the sale in French, and she was asking me like questions about where I was from and just engaging with me there, which is rare also, because like a lot of times it's not like that. Like French people don't be like, oh, how are you, did you find everything okay, and they're scanning your items. You find everything okay? Oh, okay, yeah. So your total is $13, okay, or 13 euros. It's not like that in the US. It's not like customer service friendly. It's just like they scan your stuff and they're like, okay, that's 13 euros, card or cash, okay, here the button, all right, next. It's like that. But sometimes I find myself like people do interact a lot with me, and it's not so bad. And then also on top of that, a lot of French people, they do speak a little bit of French, a little bit of English. And I think I heard of something else that a lot of people, a lot of French people want to show that they speak English. And I do see that a lot of times that I'm speaking English and I do still speak with an accent. And sometimes it's people can tell, and even some people can be like, oh, that sounds like an American accent. Are you from the US? Oh, I speak English too. Oh, je parle anglais. And then they speak to me in English. And then I'm like, oh, but I want to speak French. But they speak to me. So they try to prove that they can speak in English. So I've encountered that too. So I think that's how the people are, in my opinion.
That helps me a lot. That helps me a lot, because I have heard of the comments about food and not really feeling Americans, like that whole thing. I've heard that more than like the positive experiences. So, and specifically regarding like France and French in that way. So I was like, I'm like, what is your real experience? I hear so many things, but what has it really been like for you? And I love that you said it depends on the person. I think that also humanizes the country and humanizes the experience so that we're not generalizing.
Yeah.
So many generalizations can happen so easily.
And oh, totally.
Of course, in American culture, it's just part of like how people do things here, and it's not a compliment. It's like a lot of generalizations happen so easily here. But just for me, a non-French speaking person who's heard things, not really knowing how it is for real. So thanks for taking the time to answer that with great detail. That actually gives me hope and inspires me, because I know a little bit. And so if I ever wanted to kind of pick it back up in the future, just knowing that it's not always going to be met with resistance if I get something wrong and be corrected in a harsh way, but it actually might be more of a humane experience. So thanks for that. I needed to hear that.
As you should. Like, and again, if you ever find yourself in Paris, let me know. I'll give you the tour in French. and yes, this was really, really, really fun. Really, really good conversation.
Enjoyed it.
So where can people find you? I know we didn't get to talk about I know that you're an author. I didn't know this.
Yes. It's like a little, like, it's a non-secret because definitely want the whole world to know about it, right? So I decided in fall of last year to launch a manual called Christine's Spanish on the Go. Only one, because I have a plan to make it a series. It's a shorter book, and it provides tips, pronunciation tips, phonetics that are geared towards a native English speaker learning Spanish. So it's very
specific. That's so good.
It's very specific. And I mentioned when I started my business, my biggest requests have been people wanting me to teach them Spanish. So I decided to do something about it where they can have something tangible and not wait on having to have a class with me to practice independently. And I've heard people say, hey, I bought this book, probably way more expensive, but I don't know if I'm saying it right. So it allowed them to actually know if they follow the pronunciation tips that I provide in the manual, that they'll be speaking it correctly. So I'm working on doing something with it, a relaunch coming soon. Be on the lookout on your LinkedIn. I'll be launching a PDF with some perks added. So that's going to be a surprise for now, but I will post about it when it's ready.
Okay. Yes. All right. And where can people find your agency if they want, if they need interpretation or translation?
Thank you. My website is www.christine with a C-H, C-H-R-I-S-T-I-N-E-L-S.com. Almost all socials. On LinkedIn, it's Christine Scott. On Facebook, it's Christine Language Solutions. It's Christine at Christine Language on Instagram. Okay. And those are probably the main ones.
All right. I love it. Okay. Well, I'm sure people were going to hit you up for all the language learning advice, the translation, all of the things that you offer. You're such a phenomenal person. And I'm so glad to be talking to you. Honestly, this was really fun.
I appreciate it, Anthony. Thank you again. More, I definitely see this as a see you soon rather than a like thank you and that's it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I look forward to updates on your socials and if I book my trip to Paris, I'll know who to call.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for answering this call again. And we will stay in touch. Hasta pronto.
Hasta pronto.
Au revoir. Oh, au revoir. Okay. Bye bye. Okay.
Thank you. All the best. I want this to grow. Thank you for sharing your story as well. And I look forward to learning more about you.